Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Cindy Gross, and yes, I am the warrior. Hello, and welcome to Cindy's Corner, bringing you timely topics in an informative and entertaining way from all corners of the world. And tonight, it really does mean all corners. I'm going to keep my opening point statement brief, and the show to run on time.
Okay, folks, we have a technical problem with Cindy's telephone, so I'm just going to run a brief promotional break, and then she will call back into the program, and we'll restart her, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Madison's Constitutional Protection Corporation and Open Rebellion Radio are proud to announce a new show, The Voice of Reason, with your host, Michael Murphy, senior staff writer with Madison's, will air at an internet connection near you each Monday evening at 7 p.m. Central. Each week, we will take a look at some of the top issues and stories in the news, and then take a look at specific subjects and events in depth. Always at the forefront will be the Constitution, the Republic, and our responsibilities as we try to help steer the nation back to foundational principles. It is not for us to expect Congress or a president to do our job. George Washington said, "The Constitution of the United States, its only keepers, the people." Likewise, when Ben Franklin was asked what sort of government they had given, he replied, "A republic, if you can keep it." Keep is a verb, and a verb requires action. The mission of Madison is to articulate how and why the Constitution is an asset for all. It is never a liability. Please join us each week.
For holding on. We will get this technical situation fixed by next week's show. In tonight's very brief Cindy's Points opening statement, featuring some opinions on the headlines today, I just want to briefly share with you a story we have been following in New York about the NYC DOE Principal Rachelle White. We have been following on Cindy's Corner education reform issues. According to the New York Post this week, Rachelle White is under fire for failing to call for immediate help as an assistant principal went into cardiac arrest. This is the same principal we followed over the summer through our articles on Madison that went through some questionable activities, including displaying a mural that offended Hindus and Jews. The real question we have to ask, whether you're in a New York City public school, a private school on the West Coast, a homeschool situation, or any situation involving education from grades pre-K through to see what happens to correct our broken system. Because of the debate, this topic is going to be discussed in detail in articles this week through Madison CPC Media Network and website. I also want to say thanks. Thank you to my listeners, to my followers, to those who share on various media outlets. I want to thank you for making my radio show number one on the network and for making my articles among the most shared and discussed internationally. I have a new Instagram account, and I'm asking you to follow it. Stories featuring menus and tablescapes, home decor, fashion, and much more. Please check out and follow Cindy's Corner Radio Show on, and check out my articles this week on Madison's on book reviews and some of the most sought-out handbags this week. Next week, we have an awesome show planned. Peter Madrigal, manager at Sir, will be here for the entire hour and discussing the season 5 premiere of Vanderpump Rules, which is going to be airing the following week. Peter also has a brand new line of hair products and is publishing a new high luxury magazine. So we are very excited to have him for the entire hour next week, and we are going to feature call-ins to the show. And speaking of excitement, Kendall Casey Unruh, my friend and leader of Unbound the Delegate and a supporter of Vote Your Conscience, will join me on my last live broadcast before the election on November 2nd. A must listen for all. And now for tonight's show. I am going to let each of my millennial young leaders speak and introduce themselves and discuss their work, because this town hall is about them. This focus group is featuring young people who care, who act, who engage, and who get others to join them. So join me in welcoming to our first focus group somebody who is calling in from Israel, a very, very dear friend of mine, Joshua Nierenberg.
Hi, Cindy. Hello, Joshua. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Cindy. Good morning to you. Can you hear me, Joshua?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
I can barely hear you. If you can make it a little louder, that would be great.
Okay, fine. Thank you so
Welcome
much for having me on your show today. Thank you, Cindy.
It is a pleasure, because Joshua is always one of the first people I call upon when I need a young voice to speak at a rally at the United Nations, to join me with leaders on state elected officials and people in Washington. He is just a leader. He engages. He speaks out. He is very focused. So, Joshua, tell my audience a little bit about how you started, actually, because I believe you started maybe in junior high school and was very active in high school.
Yes. So, actually, I started in fifth grade. My brother was serving in the Army, and he was stationed in the desert, and he wanted some fleeces. And at that point, he didn't have enough money for it. So I was able to fundraise enough money for his unit, his platoon, to receive the fleeces. And from there, the organization that I was working with said, you know what, I see you as an asset, and I want to work with you. And from that point on, I knew that I was able to do something. I knew that it was my civic duty to protect another man. And from there, I continued on in high school, created my club, an Israel Advocacy Club. I created some relationships with the congressional representatives in my district, in my city, in my borough, and I just continued from there.
I should say, tell everybody that his principal, his teachers, organization leaders of international organizations like Stand With Us and ZOA all know and appreciate and honor Yoni for his work. Tell people some of the different activism you have done and how you engage students.
Okay, so when someone thinks about activism and advocacy, the first thing that comes to mind is just a regular conversation. And it's true, the first thing and the first step to talking to another individual is through a dialogue and through a conversation. And that's what a lot of the things that happen on college campus deal with. However, we're in the 21st century, and everyone has a social media presence. So the second thing that I always make sure to do is to have my presence on Facebook, on social media, because that's how my generation talks to one another. I consider myself an old person because I still use my Facebook, even though I have all the new Snapchat to Instagram. But one generation younger than me, half of them do not even have Facebook anymore. So I like to say that I deal with a lot of anti-Semitism on the college campus and on the high school level, surprisingly. A lot of it has happened on the social media outlets, and after that, on the college campus itself.
Yoni, when you say social media, you also participated in a lot of live events, like the event we did at the United Nations, and you've been to the United Nations before. And I know you've worked with elected officials from both parties. Tell us some of the issues that you worked with some elected officials and some of the leaders you have met.
Okay, so the major situation that happened in the last 5 years, I'd like to say, is the Iran deal. And depending on where you are on the spectrum, your views on this critical issue for the Middle East and for the United States can vary on different issues on what is important to you. So when I was working with my senator at the time, I actually wrote some legislation for her. And it was difficult, it was struggling, it was eye-opening to see, because growing up I had this one-track mind, but now when you're in the field, you have every single opinion, and they all count, and they all matter. The way that you write the resolutions, the way that you write letters and bills and laws, it all matters in this case. So, especially when you deal with something that is this large, everyone's voice wants to matter, and everyone cares about it. So I like to say that when you deal with someone and the situation on that scale, every voice matters, and you have to take into account every single dignitary that you deal with, especially the ones that I dealt with, and all the different representatives from the county level up to the state level, to the region, to the congressional level, and sometimes even to the embassy abroad.
What do you say when people say young people don't care? And I have to be honest with you. I know many young people. I work with young people all the time. In fact, I get calls from young people all the time. They want me to get them jobs and write, you know, recommendations for them, but they really don't know the issues. They're really not activists. But what do you say to people when they say kids aren't involved? How do you address that issue?
You know, this is something that happens, and I see it all the time, even on the social media outlets, when they say, I posted one or two articles, I wrote one, I shared some. But at the same token, that's something that all of us should be doing on a regular basis. Making our voice heard is something that is crucial, and especially for my generation. And when it happens, I'd like to say, congratulations, but it's just the beginning. You have to continue, because it's not the first article that matters. It's the amount of time and the continuity that you write, and the amount of times and who it gets to, that's what matters. So I like to say to them, thank you for what you've been doing, but I want you to continue, because even though you might feel good on that one article, in deep down, I know that one article is not enough, especially out there where one article is just the tip of the iceberg for a lot of situations. And I know when I see these students that are passionate about something, I know that they can accomplish great things. And you just need to tell them that they can do it and give them that little push.
Okay, I have another question for you. My question to you is, are you hearing, I know you're in Israel, but what are you hearing from people your age about the presidential candidates, the election, and the debate?
So it's actually interesting because I have on one side, I have friends that say, you know what, I'm not voting because both of them are bad. And then I have some students on the other side that know a lot of the facts. They'll bring up some of the stuff I'm reviewing. They'll stay up late and they'll watch the primaries, especially tonight. I have a student that's going to be up. He's waking up in an hour from now. And when I have a conversation with them about it, sometimes it can go just straight down a wall, and they say, you know what, I'm not voting for the specific candidate because of his views on the Middle East. But then I'll have another conversation with another student, and I'll go down into the nitty-gritty and go into detail about it. Go into who voted for who, for what resolutions, during what year, and during their election season. So it's actually, I have both sides of the spectrum here. And it's difficult to balance because at one side, you'd like to, you'll have those conversations with the people that know this stuff. And then on the same time, you'll just look at the other students and like, why don't you care about it? You're voting in 20 days from now. Your taxes are going to be going to this presidency. Your vote actually matters at this point in your life. Why don't you take charge and take care of that?
Well, you say it better than anybody else because you're speaking to your peers. And when you say it, it has a bigger impact. I would also like to let my listeners know that you are actually an international blogger yourself. You write articles for the Times of Israel on pro-Israel, pro-Zionistic issues. And like you said, you are very active on Facebook. I also must tell people something about a young activist. Yoni is the first person to say please, to say thank you, to offer to volunteer, to offer to help out. Any what way possible, whether it's with his hands, with his brain, with his words, getting people to get together. And he emphasizes the idea of being a leader and sharing. And because it's 4 o'clock in the morning where you are, we are going to say shalom and have a good day. And thank you so much for joining us. And I am sure we're going to hear a lot more from you. I know every one of your teachers says one day you're going to be at the White House. It's always on your Facebook page. And we are honored to have you on the show and know you when. And I'm sure you'll be a guest in the near future. So thank you again, Joshua Yerenberg.
Thank you so much, Cindy, for having me. It was a pleasure to be on. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Our next guest is Eric Swanson. He is currently studying dentistry. But while he's studying dentistry, because he has a passion for politics, he is doing a job as director of social media for Wendy Long. Wendy Long is the Republican and conservative candidate running against Chuck Schumer in New York. And this is a critical, critical election in New York because if Hillary Clinton wins, then Chuck Schumer becomes the Senate Majority Leader. So a lot of people are looking at this, and Eric has had a very big responsibility given to him. So join us, Eric. Are you on the phone?
Yes, I am, Cindy. How are you?
How are you? And thank you for joining us. I was just telling people how you started volunteering while you're in dental school, doing the social media in a race that's very important in New York. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you started as a political activist at a young age.
Well, like Joshua, I started actually in fifth grade, same exact as him, and I started with local politics. I ran for school, elected office, student council, and I just had a passion for it ever since I was a little kid. My family was always political, So I think I was always around it, and I just evolved and adapted to news, and I always loved it. So what I do, I am in school. I'm studying not politics, dentistry, like you said, and I think it's really important that students, diverse students, get involved in politics. So I am, like you said, on Wendy Long. She's running for the U.S. Senate. I'm on her campaign as her social media director. And prior to that, I was on the Carly Fiorina campaign, and it was an amazing experience for me.
I didn't tell my audience about that, but I do want to discuss with you Carly, because many, many of my listeners are big Carly fans and are following her future aspirations in wherever she's heading, because there were so many rumors of different positions she's seeking. But what was it like to be working on a presidential candidate who was in the primary and a woman?
It was definitely amazing. I was in New Hampshire with her in January, right before the New Hampshire primary up there. And prior to that, I was in school in D.C., actually, at Catholic University, and I was involved in the college aspect of the campaigning. So I was going around the Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia area, and talking with other colleges about Carly and trying to really spread her name. It's really difficult when you have a candidate, much like Wendy, that's not known, and you really have to get her name out there. So that was our goal with Carly, and that's what I did with her. With Wendy, it's more social media, more digital, and social media is really the new news. No one watches news anymore. It's all opinionated, and it's much easier and more factual on Facebook, Twitter, et cetera.
Well, I want to ask you something. Our first guest was discussing his bipartisan political activism. You are, from what I understand, a very strong conservative, and you're a millennial who's a very young, outspoken conservative. What is it like, and tell people some of the experience you've had being a young conservative on a campus.
Totally. So it's really very, very rare to find conservatives. I do have a very small friend group that is conservative. But no, it's very demeaning. You get told off a lot by professors, and you can't even talk about the facts. It's all about opinions. It's all about the social issues. And I think that's very, very big in the college atmosphere and the university atmosphere, is the social issues. And you're faced with I go to a Catholic university as well, so I feel like professors should exhibit the Christian sense of politics. And as a Catholic, we have an obligation to vote Republican. We have an obligation to support pro-life candidates and to denounce pro-choice candidates. And all my professors are pro-Bernie, pro-Hillary Democrats, and it's very, very shameful. So it is crazy. It is hard to deal with a Democrat atmosphere. And one analogy I'd like to share is that I always tell my liberal friends, including some family members, is how do you feel when you use your iPhone, Cindy? You feel in control. You feel like you can do anything you want. You can go anywhere you want. You can learn anything that you want. You're in control when you're using your iPhone. And then how do you feel when you go to the DMV? You're not in control. Do you feel like you're welcome there? Do you feel empowered when you walk into the DMV? And the answer is no. And that is a bureaucracy. That's what our government is. And that is what the Democrats want. They want more of it. And, I mean, that's going to be the real, real destruction of our country.
Tell us a little bit. Like you said, you do a lot of social media, but you also go a lot of places with Wendy. Tell us about the young people coming to events for a woman, Republican, conservative, in an area that is so Democratic.
I'll be honest with you. There are probably no young people that I've encountered while traveling the state of New York with Wendy. There was maybe one or two, and I don't even think they were of voting age. So, I mean, that's irrelevant. But, it's really hard to empower young people to come out for someone who's pro pro-life, who's anti-gay marriage, and, you know, all these social issues are so big for young kids that they don't care about, you know, if their social security is going to be taken away from them in 60 years or not. That's not their concern right now. Young millennials, a lot of young millennials, unfortunately, are very selfish, and they just don't care. They only care about themselves, what's in it for them right now at this moment, if they could get free college, if they could succeed and get stuff that they don't deserve.
If you were running a college Republican or a college conservative group on campus, what would be some of the suggestions that you would have with some of your co-leaders to enhance people to sign up or engage in conversation and partake in activism?
With my Republican, well, actually, I am trying to start a Republican club on campus. Unfortunately, Manhattan College won't allow it because there is no Democrat club, and no one wants to start that. So I'm not allowed to start the Republican club. But if I were allowed to start a Republican club, I really do think that it's important to stress that social issues are not the problem. The problem is that ISIS is infiltrating this country. The problem is that our economy is failing. And the problem is that when we graduate college, we're not going to have jobs because of the failed policies of the Democrat Party. We have Chuck Schumer, who's been in office since he's graduated college, and what has he done? He has not stood with the state of Israel. He has not helped the blacks get out of Harlem. He's not helped anybody in office. All he's done is have press conferences. All he's done is help himself and help his next opportunities with lobbyism. And it is. It's just insane. So, like, that's what I would do if I was given the choice, the option to have a Republican club on campus. It's really important. The issues are really important, and the social issues should take a backseat.
Now, right after this show is the last and third presidential debate. Do you find many of your peers, your friends, your colleagues in classroom interested in watching this? And what do they think about what's going on in the presidential election?
Yeah, so I do think that everyone will watch it. Honestly, it's become like a reality TV episode. I mean, my family, my mom particularly, is into The Real Housewives, and when I watch it with her, it really is it's very similar to this election, and I think this generation has really adapted into the generation of reality TV, and I think that's more important to people. I don't think the issues are more important. I honestly don't think that millennials sitting in front of a TV understand the topics that are coming up. I don't think anyone understands the economy, and I really do blame that on the education system. So, yeah, I think that millennials will watch this.
But they're not going to take it seriously from what it sounds like.
No, I really do think that. They are convinced that they're voting for Hillary Clinton no matter what.
Uh-huh. And how do you plan on spending your time election night?
Probably in the bathroom throwing up. But,
Great. I thought you were going to tell me something at a campaign headquarters.
Yeah, we'll definitely be at a campaign headquarters. But I will be with Wendy Long on election night. I'm pretty sure that we are going to be with Donald Trump as well. He, of course, is going to be in New York. Our polls in New York State close at 9 Eastern. So we're going to, of course, know earlier than Trump's 11 o'clock polls closing. So, I think it's going to really, really come close. Wendy, I really do think will surprise a lot of people in New York. We've been going around the state since March, and we've been meeting so many people who are really just sick of the career politicians. And I think we're going to see in the future a lot of political outsiders. I mean, you see a lot this year. Phil Oliva in upstate New York. You have John Faso, who's running in Albany. And across the country, Carly Fiorina, Ben Carson, even Donald Trump. And Wendy, of course. And it really does bring a new sense of it brings a new air. You know, it's not more of the same. So we'll definitely, I think, in the future be seeing a lot of political outsiders.
I should also say Eric is also, and this is also something I noticed, is that a lot of the millennial activists, they are also bloggers, writers. And he recently wrote an article for Madison. What was what you wrote about for Madison?
Yeah, it was actually very controversial. I got a lot of very, very negative messages on my Facebook. And I continue to get a lot of nasty, nasty messages. I wake up every morning and I see messages at least five a night. And it was about the Muslims. And I think that really is a huge topic, Syrian refugees. And one of my favorite activists is Pam Geller. I don't know if you're familiar with her. She's from your area in Woodmere. And it really is very important, I think, to understand the threat, to name the threat, and to understand that ISIS is coming in and they're here. And 25% of Muslims, like it or not, practice Sharia law. And I say to a lot of the gay people that are around campus who are very, very big activists for the Democrat Party, and I say to them, look what's happening. You're voting for a person, Hillary Clinton, Chuck Schumer, who support the infiltration of the Syrian refugees, unvetted, who practice Sharia law and who would love to see you dead. And guess what? If you talk about them, if you talk about them like I'm talking about them right now, you could be killed and you should be killed under Sharia law because you're demeaning their God, even though I'm not a Muslim. And that's what we have to understand. But with Cindy, millennials don't care about that. They only care about, oh, we need to be treated fair. And the gay people on campus, the gay people in New York who demean Donald Trump and who say that Donald Trump is anti-gay because he doesn't like us and he doesn't agree with us. And to that, I'm going to say, yeah, you know what? He might not agree with your lifestyle like many people, but he doesn't want to see you dead. Hillary Clinton and Chuck Schumer are supporters of people who want to see you dead. They want to kill you because of the way you live your life. And that is no reason to vote for a candidate. It really isn't. I mean, they should really be called anti-gay because of this. And
well, I have to tell you, you really brought up so much there with passion. And this is another thread that I see running through all these millennial activists. They have such passion. They're engaged with such enthusiasm. I'll tell you two short stories about Pamela Geller. Happens to be I was with Pamela Geller. She was giving a speech about homegrown terrorists, and there was a lot of controversy about where she was speaking because the people in the community did not want her to talk about terrorists because we can never grow them and have homemade bombs in our cities, in our towns, in our communities. The next day was the Boston Marathon incident, where it was homegrown terrorists and homegrown bombs. So that was really my first experience with Pamela Geller. And last year, I helped write legislation regarding the start of oversight of textbooks and classroom materials that should be fair, unbiased, and factually correct. And Pamela Geller picked up the information and actually shared my work through her blog. So I think very highly of Pamela Geller. And
she is amazing.
She is a wonderful one.
She actually had a death threat against her as well, and I'm pretty sure that she does still. And it's really a shame that, she's Jewish. She's not a Muslim, and more importantly, we're Americans. We live in America where we are allowed to speak freely at our own will, and that's just a shame that Democrat leaders don't condemn that, and instead they support that.
Well, Eric, you represent a young leader, a millennial. I know you want to go into dentistry, but would you ever consider going into politics?
Oh, absolutely. And I when I chose my career profession, I didn't want to choose political science. And I was political science my first semester in college. And I did change that as I adapted through my college experience, because I think that it's more important to have an understanding of more things other than a political world. And I think that as a leader, it's so important, like Ben Carson and like Carly Fiorina, to have real-world experience. And if I could contribute with one thing, and maybe I run for Congress in 10, 20 years after I have a practice as a dentist, and I think that it's important to have that. And maybe I could contribute to our failing healthcare system with my understanding of the healthcare system and having lived it and understand it, not like Chuck Schumer, who has never lived it. He has never held a private sector job. He doesn't know how to create money, a budget. He doesn't know how to create jobs. He doesn't know anything because he's lived in the system. He is the system.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and I am sure we will hear from you and hear your name out there in the news, leading people, whether or not it's in dentistry, in politics, whatever you do, you are passionate and outspoken, and we are lucky enough to have you on our show tonight. And thank you for joining us, and
thank you
for your
much,
passion.
Cindy. Thank you. Talk soon.
Yes. Bye. Our final guest tonight is Ryan Gradowski. He is a native New Yorker and a contributing writer for Red Alert Politics. He also happens to run a Republican group in New York, and he started his activism young as well. Hello, Ryan. Are you on the phone with us?
Cindy, how are you?
How are you? And thank you for
joining
us, because I have to tell you, people, Ryan is so in demand. And if you go online and look at some of the videos from the past few days of his television interviews, you will see how people are just trying to antagonize him to get out what they want to hear versus the facts he's trying to share. And he does it with such enthusiasm and passion, like our two other young people here, that you just get engaged and you want to, like, fight with him while you're watching and listening. So thank you so much for joining us, Ryan.
Thank you so much for having me on.
You are my last guest before the debate, and I have to ask you, what do you think is going to happen tonight during the last and final presidential debate before we go to the polls in November?
Well, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I heard that Trump's debate coach was Rudy Giuliani, who, in my opinion, is not the best debater in the world, but that was his debate coach. Tonight, his debate coach was Chris Christie, who I believe is probably one of the best debaters in the Republican Party. It's just fantastic. So I'm hoping that Christie's training will lead to a really, really great debate performance. I understand that he's bringing a couple of controversial figures, trying to kind of rile Hillary up, including Barack Obama's stepbrother or half brother, who's endorsed Trump, as well as the mother and fiance of people who lost their lives in Benghazi. So I think that hopefully Trump will go on the attack as much as possible, talk about WikiLeaks, talk about the FBI, talking about a quick pro quota, and give a vision for what this country is going to be like in 2020, in 2016, after he's been president for four. Sorry, so 2020 after he's been president for 4 years.
So you don't think that the election is over? You have feelings that something could happen despite what we hear in the media.
Well, the thing is that the polls, so national polls, have been very bad for Trump. He goes between 4 and maybe 8 points, 8-9 points nationally. He's about, I think, 6% down in the Real Clear Politics polling average. So it's been, the day before the first debate, Trump was winning. He was winning in Colorado, winning in Nevada, Utah, Arizona, winning in Florida and North Carolina and Ohio and Iowa and Maine's second congressional district, enough to win him the presidency. Then, of course, he had a horrible debate performance, and the videotape leak didn't help things. There's just no getting around that. Hillary, in the last week, because of the nonstop and ever-growing amount of leaks from WikiLeaks and from the FBI, has been having a couple of very bad days, too. She's trailing in Iowa. She's trailing in Ohio. I understand she's trying to campaign in Arizona. We'll see how that goes. But as far as ground game operations go, Clinton always boasted that she had the most fantastic ground game a Democrat's ever had in its history. Well, early polling is out. Early voting is out, rather. 2 million people have already voted for the presidency. In Iowa, Democrats have always outperformed Republicans by about 45,000 to 55,000 votes. Right now, she has about 36,000 votes, so 38,000 votes. She's far behind where Democrats usually are. In Ohio, heavy Democratic counties are down by 20 and 30 points, while the state is up by 1% as a whole. In Florida, Republicans hold a 1.5% voting advantage. In North Carolina, Republicans have a 4% voting advantage, though it's down from 4 years ago when Romney ran. So my point, I always say to Republicans, is this. I think that the media is creating a narrative insisting don't vote. Don't go out and vote. Don't bother. The election is done with. You can become the self-fulfilling prophecy and lose this election because you decided, no, the media told me. If I heard it from CNN, that must be true. Well, case in point, if she was doing so well, if she had this 20-point lead, if she was going to have a 1964 blowout, then why isn't she doing better in early voting? Democrats are not turning out because at the end of the day, this is still Hillary Clinton, a candidate that they have absolutely no enthusiasm for whatsoever. And there's no getting around that for them.
Well, I have to say you gave so much information in that. I want my listeners to absorb it all, but I do want to just go back a little bit and tell people how you started your political career and how you are having you started also a Republican club in New York in a Queens area.
Well, okay, so I started off as a Democrat. I was a young Democrat and knocked on doors for John Kerry because I opposed the war in Iraq. I still do. Like Donald Trump, I've been right with since the beginning. And then in 2007, I said that I had two issues. I was against the war in Iraq, and I was against amnesty for illegal immigrants. They are my two constants in any opinion I have, basically. And so so I said I'll vote for any candidate who's both against amnesty and against the more foreign wars. And that candidate was Ron Paul. And I became a Republican for Ron Paul with the anticipation that I would become a Democrat after the election. But I stayed a Republican afterwards because I started reading different books. I read a lot of books, actually, about politics and about and I went to Ron Paul meetup groups. And I was talked to in a light that I had never heard before. There were so many times where I would say, I believe and I think and I believe. And people would sit there and say, well, it's great what you believe, but if it's not in the Constitution, it can't become law or it shouldn't become law. And I just had a very different experience I had usually had in the early part of my life with people telling me, no, you're wrong or you can't or this is the limits of government as was instructed as his creator. So I, long story short, though, I got involved in political activism because I had a great aunt who was very good friends with a city councilwoman, and the city councilwoman needed somebody to oppress. It was a Democrat. And I did the job, and I did the job fairly well enough that I kept on getting hired for more jobs. And I worked in campaigns for state senators and city councilmen and congressmen across the country, basically until 2014 when I was like, I can't do this for the rest of my life. This is exhausting. So I took a huge pay cut, and I said, I'm going to become a writer. And I did. I got a job with the Washington Examiner for their millennial blog, Red Alert Politics. And I've been there ever since. I've been their number one writer for, I think 15 months straight now.
And I know you also have written for the Christian Science Monitor, the American Spectator, the Daily Caller. I know you're involved with Politico because that's when I met you. You were discussing that work. Where do you see millennials today and their feelings towards all these political campaigns? I mean, in New York, we also have major state campaigns. We have a state senate up for grabs. We have the senatorial campaign, which my previous guest discussed. Where do you see people in their 20s and 30s forget about knowing issues? Are they even interested?
Yeah, well, millennials are a very unique generation in the sense that they are probably the most knowledgeable generation out there right now. They have very informed opinions about things. They do lean very heavily liberal as well. And there are several reasons as to why and to what culture they grew up in and to why they lean very liberal. But they certainly do lean liberal, and they also lean non-establishment liberal. That's why they came out so heavily for Barack Obama. I lean non-establishment right. That's why I came out so heavily for Ron Paul. I think that those elements exist in both sides of the millennial generation. As far as this election goes, I think millennials are extraordinarily disengaged. I think they don't want to vote. Polling has suggested that only 47%, according to Gallup, are actually interested in voting in this election. Other polls say it's a third of the millennial electorate that actually care about voting. I think this will probably be the lowest turnout election for millennial voters in decades. Truly because they don't like Donald Trump and they don't like Hillary Clinton. And the third party candidates really don't provide enough of an option for them to sway them to go out and vote if they believe that it's a decision between two bad candidates.
Do you think that the Bernie Sanders election had an impact on them?
But it's not as big as people make it out to be. Bernie Sanders had a tremendous amount of support from millennials, and he was the most extreme far left candidate in generations to have that kind of support from young people. At the same time, what people don't remember is that while the percentage of supporters for Bernie Sanders was the largest in a while for a single Democrat, a far left Democrat, it was a much smaller group of people than had voted in the previous 2008 primary of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. The amount of excitement for that was so much stronger than it is now. And I feel like those 3 million or 4 million millennials, however many it was, maybe 5 million millennials, that voted for Bernie were very impassioned, or very energetic, or very excited. At the same time, the total of people who voted for Obama was much larger. So you see in this election, although their excitement's high, millions of millennials decided to drop out. They had experienced hope and change, and they didn't feel like whatever Bernie Sanders was selling, or Hillary Clinton, or Donald Trump, or any of the 16 other Republican candidates, for that matter, excited them enough to get out and go vote in the primaries. And I believe that group are still just as agnostic about the general. They're not going to sit there and turn out in a high proportion.
Mm-hmm. Do you see millennials interested in any statewide elections?
State by state elections vary. Some Republicans in states like Indiana, Republicans do very well with millennials. In some elections in Texas, Republicans have done very well with millennials. Millennials are a hard group. There's certainly just some of them are just starting to get engaged with politics and with campaigns. And you know, the excitement and the conversation is around the presidential election. So I don't know if they're actually going to sit there, if going out and voting in a statewide race, no matter what state it is, would be enough, because there are very few people that are really inspiring them. I think the only election that's non-presidential that I keep hearing about over and over again that's supposedly exciting millennials, I don't have proof of this, I don't have polling to back this up, I just know from what stories I've heard, is the race in the New York's 19th congressional, because candidates like Bernie Sanders are going out to support Zephyr Teachout and are drawing very, very large crowds.
Uh-huh. And that should be very interesting for the gubernatorial race in New York, which will be next year, because now there's a flip on that with the education issue. So that's quite interesting, as I've been following it.
Yeah, well, what's interesting in New York State with governor's election is the growth of the Green Party. The Green Party got 6% of the vote last time. It's tremendously large. And if Democrats, you know, it's interesting. It's like Republicans in 1992. In 1992, Republicans had George H.W. Bush, who was a globalist, and he was a globalist, center-right, very elitist. And he was out of touch with baseline Republican working-class voters. And so they left for Ross Perot. Now, Ross Perot didn't lead a political revolution afterwards. He retired after his campaign, as did the Reform Party. But what Bernie has done is a lot of that they're chiming against the capitalists, the moderate Democrats, and what we have in New York State is a moderate Democrat as our governor. And you see this growing progressive movement on the left that's saying reject the Democratic Party. They cannot offer you options because they are sold out to Wall Street or other interests. So it will be interesting to see if going into the future, if the next election, if the Green Party gets 15% or 16%. I mean, that may very well happen if they feel like Andrew Cuomo is both corrupt and a moderate.
Now tell us a little bit about the group you run.
My group, it's the Middle Village Republican Club. It's a great group of people. It's local from the neighborhood. We're working really hard on local elections for next year because that's really where New York groups can make their impact. So we're working very heavily for next year for this mayor's election and for our city council election. And then hopefully going forward into the midterms, we've grown tremendously, but hopefully we'll grow even more into the future where we can participate in winning over state Senate elections and state assembly.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. I know you want to get ready to follow the debate and write about it. And you represent the best of a millennial, of an activist.
Oh, thank you. If only my mother ever said that to me.
I'm sorry?
It was a joke. Never mind. I said, if only my mother ever said that to me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Cindy. Anytime.
Thanks. So, people, was I right? Did I promise you young passion activism? We were supposed to have Heather Alper on with us. She was calling in actually from China because she is actually there working on some activism and has started an international campaign. Unfortunately, due to technical issues and time issues, we were not able to have her on this broadcast, but I will be having an article this week featuring Heather Alper, her work as a pro-Israel, pro-Zionist activist from high school through college, and her new campaign that she's asking everybody to participate in. Remember, people, next week we're having Peter Madrigal, manager of Sir Restaurant, star of Vanderpump Rules, and he is bringing to us his new hairline, his new luxury magazine, and as we say, clean hair and dirty martinis. And it's going to be our first call-in of guests to ask questions to Peter and discuss with Peter some of the topics that are of interest to them, with them during the season. 2 weeks from now, we're going to have on Kendall Onra, the leader of the Unbound Delegates. That's the last live broadcast before the actual election. So please follow my broadcast on Blog Talk Radio and Madison CPC. Follow the article. And remember that all corners lead to Cindy's Corner on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. My book, Rubber Room Romance, is available through Madison and Amazon, and have a good night. Enjoy the debate.